buckle up for the Uncommon Leader Podcast. Just friends hanging out and breaking down leadership challenges and unwrapping techniques that can be applied to make a difference. A fun look at what is possible if we lead in an uncommon way. An invitation to be the champion we were created to be. Not your typical leadership podcast.
Hey listeners, welcome back to the Uncommon Leader Podcast. I've been excited about this interview for a long time. I get a chance to chat with Adam Ward, a forensic betterer. He's an author, a world-class Ironman finisher, a man of faith, and I'm proud to say a friend of mine. He's had a strong influence on me in both my personal and professional life. Adam talks about on his LinkedIn page that he loves to work with organizations to identify and disrupt the status quo within their organizations. All these things are important and things that I chat about with Adam today, and I know you're going to get a lot of value out of this conversation. So without any further ado, here's Adam Ward.
Adam Ward, it's great to have you on the show today, buddy. How you doing?
Hey, thank you so much. I'm doing well.
All right. It's good to have you. Not just on the podcast, but good to catch up with you and have a conversation this week. But I appreciate you taking the opportunity to be on the Uncommon Leader Podcast and getting this started. So I'll start you off with the same question I always start all my other guests, and that's this one. Tell our listeners a story from your youth or childhood that still impacts kind of who you are today and has an impact as to what you do as a leader.
Whew, man. Yeah. I always like to push the boundaries of things, and not that I was an intentional rule breaker. I grew up in a household where my dad was a military officer and very strict. And I had a BB gun, and I'd always go around the woods, you know, shooting things. And I was in my front yard, and I saw this bird. I'm like, I'm going to shoot this bird. Well, I missed the bird, and I didn't see the car behind it. And I shot out the car window of our neighbor. And immediately, my heart just dropped, and I got to call my dad and tell him I shot the car window out. And it's like, who knows? I mean, that car window could have got broken a million different ways, but I ended up walking over to the neighbor's house, knocking on his door, telling him I did it, calling my dad at work and telling him. And I ended up getting grounded for most of that summer. And not because he grounded me for shooting the window out, but because I couldn't get done until I wrote a 1,000-word essay on gun safety and handling. And so I think there's, you know, a couple of things that stuck with me on that. And I think it's even more important in today's society is that we need to come forward when we do something that's disintegrous and, you know, that people know is wrong, and then just come out and stop trying to hide behind stuff. And The second thing is, it doesn't end when we admit something. You know, there's always repercussions, and we got to deal with those repercussions. And that meant that summer I spent most of my time building Legos in my room. So I've been in a lot of uncomfortable moments since then. But, you know, coming forward and setting it right.
Wow. Yeah. It's in Hebrews, right? Discipline's not always pleasant at the time. It goes through, and then, you know, being in integrity, and you know, I see, you know, our world today, you're talking about uncommon leader being a topic, but in our world, in our country, in our communities, and they keep getting smaller in our organizations, you know, we have a void in leadership, and a big part of that is integrity that goes through that. So stepping up and admitting when you did something wrong, knowing that there still could be repercussions,
right?
Pretty powerful. No, I appreciate you sharing. Yeah. And do you have any more BB guns? You still have BB guns, right?
I still have a pellet gun. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, I appreciated that too, right at the start, about pushing boundaries and in terms of being creative. And it actually leads into really what I wanted to get in with you, because when I did the research on just, you know, kind of getting ready for the podcast and many topics we could talk about, frankly, the thing that really hit me as I looked through on your profile was your title and your experience of your consulting company is a forensic betterer.
Yeah.
So I'll just stop there. Tell me, what the heck is a forensic betterer?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, John. I've had several people comment, ask questions. What is that title? And fundamentally, I guess my life motto has always been, there is better. There's always better. And just this pursuit to improve on something. And that something is usually an identified pain point in my life. So as a consultant, like the world's full of consultants, the world's full of coaches, teachers, business, whatever. And I wanted something that stood out. And so the whole forensic thing is, hey, let me come in, look around, and then let me offer a path forward to make it better. So that's really, it's mixing data, experience, and intuition with a plan to improve whatever that business issue is.
I love that. So again, there's so many different ways I could go, because I want to stay on that a little bit about, there's always better as a life motto. The pursuit to improve is always there. But I really actually like the, as I listen through that forensic side is, let me come in and look around.
Right.
And so can you give me an example as to when somebody let you come in and look around and what you found and how you helped them make it better?
Oh, man. John, so when I had an undergraduate in engineering and then several years into engineering, I wanted to find out why customers were buying my product. So I went back and got my graduate degree with a focus on market research. And what I found when I dove into market research is that we actually need a product or service works if it's meeting an unmet need. And so when Steve Jobs got on, announced the iPhone, that was a big deal. We can go back 100 and some years when Henry Ford came out with a car. He's like, my customers would ask for faster horses. And Steve Jobs will say, no one asked for the iPhone. But it was meeting needs. And I was downloading MP3s. It was a pain. And he introduced iTunes with the iPod, and you could just download it automatically. Well, one of the things that I see with customers or clients or businesses or leaders is they think they have a fairly good understanding of what their customers want because they read reports, maybe some quality surveys, or maybe they interact directly with a customer. And one of my favorite stories is this physician, and let's just call her Karen. And she had a patient, and we said, okay, we're going to run this new experiment, this new way to deliver care. And she's like, okay, go ahead, do it. I know where I've been taking care of her for 30 years. We got done. We were doing the debrief after the appointment, and all of the people in the room were calling her one name, and she was calling her another. The physician was calling her another name. And we're like, why are you calling her that? She hasn't gone by that name since her mom called her that as a child. So the doctor thought they knew this patient, and for 30 years have been calling them a name only their mom called them. So that's just a great example of, thinking you know something and not being able to come back just a little bit to say, man, do I really know?
Well, those are awareness opportunities for us both to learn as leaders that we don't know it all, and that others can help to encourage us down through that process. But I love that story, even as simple as a relationship building scenario and knowing the name that they go by versus might be what's on their record as they go through that as journey. That's a fun story. You might be saying it, don't be a Karen on the
that's a perfect setup. That
everybody talks about is Karen. No, we'll protect them. We won't use the real names to protect the innocent.
Yeah, exactly. Down
through that path. Well, the forensic better. Let me in. Let me take a look and let me see what I can help to make better. So let's assume that you've gone in, you've identified an opportunity. You see a pile somewhere, you discover it, and you know you can improve it. Some of the challenges in the industry that you and I have worked together are that people don't want to listen to that. So what's your experience or maybe knowledge in two fronts? I'll ask a two-part question. What are the barriers that people have that they don't want to listen to new advice when they look at a process? Mm-hmm. And then secondly, what is the actual process you would use to make something better? So there's two parts to it.
Yeah, man, that's great. The first one's easy. It's pride. If you're not humble and no one's going to be able to teach you anything. And so I've said no to working with a lot of leaders over the years, literally after deciding after a minute conversation. Now, the conversation was an hour long, but I'd already chosen a minute in that it wasn't going to work. And that's just something you pick up after working with so many organizations, so many different industries. People like to think that we're unique. And I mean, we are, but our problems are, you know, the same issue. So if we're going to improve something, fundamentally, we've got to have humility to begin with. And, you know, Maxwell says, once the pain to change is less than the pain of remaining the same, right? That's when people will change.
Actually change, right? Absolutely.
Right. So the process of getting someone to change is painting that future as a way that's so much better than the current way that they'll go through that change process. And that can be, I mean, I know, John, you talk about your 7 F's, and that can be in any one of those areas. Mm-hmm. But just finding what that imagined future could look like, and then breaking it down into simple steps to getting there. And then a lot of emotional roller coaster coaching as you're going through the individual issues, because change is hard, especially organizational change. And, you know, you and I have done that at, you know, Fortune 50 companies. And, you know, we've worked locally with small nonprofits. And so the bigger the change project, the tougher it is. But the leaders are going through the same thing, the whole, any size of company.
Well, I love that. I mean, ultimately, the largest barrier to change often is that leader. And if yep. they can accept and be humble and recognize that they don't have all the answers, that can be pretty powerful. And, you know, they truly, again, a good leader, an uncommon leader will have that humility. You know, going back to even some of your early comments about fessing up to things, okay, and knowing too many times leaders think they have to have all the answers.
They do.
And they have to be right. And that's just not the case. I mean, allowing other people to help them solve problems would go a long way to being successful. And then, frankly, again, listening to the process of helping them to paint a future picture that's so much better than what it is today, that they won't, and you've used this term before, I know, because of working with you, so that they won't go back, or they won't want to go back to the way it was before. So that can be ultimately very powerful as well. Cool. Thanks for sharing that. Hey, let me take you in a little bit different direction here.
Okay.
So I know you have authored a couple of books, the most recent one, Lean Design in Healthcare.
Yeah.
When you think about, you know, being a better or a forensic better, like, why did you write Lean Design in Healthcare? What was the reason you wanted to write that book?
Oh, man. I mean, I always wanted to write books when I was younger. I don't know why. So I've written, I don't know, 5 or 6 books. 2 or 3 of them were never published. Mm-hmm. And then one self-published, and then 2 I partnered with a publisher and published. And so there was this desire to write a book to begin with, but secondly, there was a hole in the industry, and I wrote it for healthcare. I don't particularly care for the title. It was actually a working title. We ended up registering that with the Library of Congress, so we couldn't change it. But how can you create systemic innovation in healthcare? Now, I was at a conference. Actually, you and I were at the same conference, and I walked up to a publisher and said, "Hey, what are you missing?" And they said, "You know, we're actually missing a book on this." And I said, "Oh, well, that's right, my wheelhouse. And if you were to have it, how would you like it written?" And she handed me 2 books and said, "Could you mix these 2 books and then, you know, create a book like that?" And I said, "Sure." So I ended up writing the book as a fable, but it was drawn on 10 to 15 years of consulting and then specifically catering it to the healthcare audience. If you don't have the ability to create repetitive innovation projects, how would you do that? So it was actually fun. A lot of people are like, "Well, I can never write that much." I used speech to text to write the entire first draft.
Nice.
So there was no typing. I dictated it all. And then, of course, the editing process, I was on the computer a little bit. Not as much as the editors, but yeah.
I mean, so yeah, you're right. You, frankly, if you listen to many authors, even the ones who, you know, appear in the New York Times bestseller list on a frequent basis, you don't hear them say that it's fun to write a book. And no doubt, you know, the other thing I've heard about writing a book is that if you want to make money, it's not in writing a book. So it's not going to be a moneymaker. You're really trying to get your message across. And again, there's got to be a better way kind of that exists inside of that message. So
I think I've made, curious. I think I've made about 5 cents an hour, John. On that project,
so. Your hourly rate didn't quite cover what you might've been doing. But I think you also, if I remember correctly, you did some multitasking. You were even recording as you rode on your bike and you trained and things like that as you went and you wrote that speech to text version as well. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. Adam, I can't wait to frankly really share a bunch of different things with you on this podcast. I know there are going to be so many more things that so many more paths that I had to go down, and you got more messages to share than I have minutes to interview today. So let's kind of, we'll say pause at that one, knowing there's going to be more, but I want to finish with a couple questions.
Okay.
First of all, how can people connect with you? Because I think they're going to want to understand how to connect with you and see and communicate with you on some of your journey.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you want to find me, you can type in Adam Ward Innovation on LinkedIn. That'll come up. You can email me, adam@adzmikl.com. That's adam@adsmichael.com. So I'm really good at getting back on my LinkedIn direct messages. But Adam Ward Innovation, don't type in Adam Ward Honda Technician. That article needs to be banned from the internet.
Oh, that's right. Okay, we pull that off there. Okay, I didn't know about that one. I may have to do that myself just to see what's part of that article. Cool. All right. Hey, thanks for sharing that. And I'll make sure, again, we put that in the show notes as to your LinkedIn profile that people can connect with you there as well. I'll make it a little bit easier for them. So last question. I always finish it up with the same one. And I may get to, when you're in here multiple times, I'll change it up a little bit. But you know, Adam, I'm giving you a billboard in the busiest airport in the world. And I think it's still Atlanta, even though post-COVID, things like that, they've been the busiest, might be somebody else in another country. But I'm giving you a billboard at the top of the escalator that millions of people a day are going to see it. What's your mantra that you want to put on that billboard so that people will know what they need to do going forward? What do you want them to know?
Wow. Honestly, John, this one's going to hit the faith component. I live in the city of Columbus. We're about 2.5 million people in the 17 county area. I did some research and I found out here in the Midwest Bible Belt, over 250,000 people in our city had never heard the gospel. They didn't know what the gospel was when we presented the data to them. It was not on their radar at all. And, you know, if we look at the life of Jesus, he said that he came so that we could have life to the full. And I mean, that sounds like a pretty cool imagined future. And so I would probably stick up a 17 word summary of the gospel and put that on that billboard so that people who don't know can see it. And then they can decide, you know, is that something I want to be a part of? And not John 3:16 and not God loves you, but you know, that, look, we were made with communion with God and we got separated because we messed up. But he died and was resurrected so that we could spend eternity with him. And so that's probably what I would put on a billboard.
Yeah, I have to get that space in there, get the font big enough, absolutely, to have those 17 words. No, I appreciate you sharing that. I understand it. I think certainly faith is a big part of my personal journey as well. And you're right, it's probably not while John 3:16. You know, is the most recognizable verse. It's really, I like what you said, it's challenging people to understand what that envisioned future state can be as a result of reading those words. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty powerful. So I appreciate you sharing. I wouldn't change it all as well. Adam, thank you so much for giving me some time to chat today. Again, I think we'll do this again in the future. And I hope that you had some fun with it as well.
Man, you bet. I love this. It's just time just flies by. So just thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Take care, buddy.
Well, that interview was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Adam Ward, no doubt, is an uncommon leader, one who succeeds in business and in life, a leader who aligns his heart with his work and his purpose. If you enjoyed today's episode and would like to subscribe to future episodes, or catch up on some past episodes that we've done as well, go to my website at www.growingchampions.net/podcast. Until next time, go and grow champions.